Accession number 30631, Mr. Herbert Landsberg, Reel 5. Now, so what happened then? Did you manage to get an engine to get...
It took us ages to get to San Marino because we couldn't travel. We had to travel mainly at night, and we had also to get... When the driver said he had no coal or coke, we had to sort down wood, small trees, and cut them into suitable sizes, and then keep the boilers going. And took us 2 or 3 days to get there for a journey, which was about 6 hours in normal time.
And any trouble on the journey, other than delays?
We were very lucky. The only thing, we didn't have enough food, but the locals were very glad to sell us food because we had a lot of French money, which we knew would be no use to us whatsoever, and we paid any prices that they wanted for basic food to keep us fit and alive to get home. And so after 2-3 days we got there. And somebody got on to the war office, and they sent the French, a fishing boat. They didn't have time, that's all in this thing there. Fishing boat. And they didn't have time to unload the fish, and it was going bad in the hold. And the chaps who were down below, because they couldn't all stand on deck, it must have been. And incredibly sickening, and took us again days to get back because we couldn't take a direct itinerary back to Britain. We had to go in a roundabout sort of way, but pretending it was a fishing boat, and whenever any planes were in sight, there was enough tarpaulin on deck to cover everybody alive so that it still looked like a fishing boat.
And how did the voyage go? Where did you eventually end up at?
Well, we landed, I believe, in New Haven. I'm not quite sure whether it was New Haven or another small port. And a train was ready to take us to London, and we were given billets in Alexander Palace, which was a transit camp in London. And now, after a few days, we were allowed to ring our families to tell them we're back home safely. And I remember my mother coming up to in tears of joy. The radio had been very depressing to listen, that the British Army could well be all taken prisoners, you know, because of the slow evacuation at Dunkirk.
So more than pleased to see you.
Oh, unbelievable. But everybody had either girlfriends, parents, or close relatives of some sort to come to Alexander Palace.
Now, what was it like at Alexander Palace?
The officers were all billeted in the buildings, brick buildings, but the rest of us were out in tents, and luckily...
In the park?
In the park, and luckily it was, of course, summer by then, and nobody could grumble about being cold or uncomfortable.
What was the state of your morale like? I mean, you got back, and Churchill was in around about then. How did you feel having got back to England?
Well, we were told immediately that not to think that you were settling there. We were going to be sent up north and to build beach defences as fast as possible because of an imminent invasion of German troops. And so within a few days we were on trains going north.
North? I thought it was Ilfracombe.
Oh, no, that's Ilfracombe was south, that was Devon.
That's later, is it?
That's later.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So where'd you go north?
Along the coast from south end, if that is the coast here, the whole coastline, every few, every day the train stopped and we had to get out and build tank traps and take down all the signs of directions to mislead any invading forces, and building superstructures in order to store anything that was needed to repel them when they landed. If they landed there, nobody knew where they were going to land.
Now, tell us about the defences you were building. So what was a tank trap, for instance? How would you build a tank trap?
Well, it was very basic. It was a hole in the ground, and quite deep and wide, and it had a landmine buried there. So any vehicle that was, and then it was covered with something that looked like normal foliage and fallen trees and things like that. And of course, what happened also, it didn't only trap or would have trapped German tanks, but it also trapped locals going to their fields, you know, although they had been warned, you know, that this was going to happen. But we had to draw the line somewhere in case there were any fifth columnists there to warn the Germans.
What about removing signs? So that was just the idea that no one would know where anything that would help the invader.
We had Royal Engineers in charge, and they were very helpful. They realized we were novices in many cases, and when they realized there were some doctors there, I consulted them about their health rather than about the tank trap construction.
So
it was quite a cheerful sort of atmosphere.
Now, what about this business of... So you removed all signs. Was that all signs?
Practically all the street or road signs, and they were either turned the other way around or taken off. And it was really a basic effort because the Germans wouldn't have read it anyhow, because if it was involved in German, they were not all in English, they were not all that such good linguists.
Now, so what about, were you erecting barbed wire on the beaches?
Yes, wire too.
Tell me about that.
Well, we weren't used to the new type of wire, which was a very intricate sort of round type. There was a name for the
Dannet?
Yeah.
Dannet.
Yes. And the conventional barbed wire we were able to put up quite well over long distances. And of course we had to watch also for the animals of the local people. You know, every day a farmer would come and say, oh my, so many cows I've lost, got hurt badly in this effort of repelling the German invasion forces. And wanted money immediately rather than write to the war office and make a claim.
So they were after compensation?
Yeah, compensation. They were entitled to it because although it was in interest of the war effort, we should have warned the farmers better than we did.
Did you lay mines on the beaches, or was somebody else
yes,
doing it?
Yes, no.
You did it?
Also, I mean, yes, but again, under very strict supervision of the Royal Engineers. And then we had people from the Ordnance Corps as well. So any lack of knowledge on our part was made up by them, you know, with their superior qualifications in either engineering or communication systems and so on.
Would you record where the mines were? Because there's an obvious danger if you lay mines on beaches.
Oh yes, quite. Certain in towns where there was ARP, usually the ARP commander was given a full map of it, you know, and warned that on no account must have fallen into the hands of the enemy.
Now, were you digging trenches and building pillboxes?
Yes.
Tell us about that. Well, yes. Where would you locate the trenches?
Well, the trenches were built so that if they had got a foothold, the Germans, then the trenches which had or were supposed to have machine guns mounted could then do the second line of defense, which was, in theory, it sounded all very good, but there weren't enough machine guns available in that part of the country for that purpose.
So the trenches were more machine gun posts than trenches?
Yes.
And did you build actual strong points, you know?
Yes, that's right.
Concrete pillboxes?
Yes, that's right, platforms.
So who would build them? I guess quite an engineering thing.
Oh, yes, it was. Again, the Royal Engineers were great help there in telling us exactly how to go about constructing it.
Now, anything else you were building? This is up and down the northeast coast.
Yes.
You know, anything happened while you were doing it? Any incidents?
Well, the main problem was local farmers or local people, how they would recognize without giving too many secrets away. Recognize the obstacles.
Now, so how long were you doing that for before you go to
Ilfracombe? Well, we did it for quite a while. Almost September, I would say. September, October. And then it was considered then that there was no danger of invasion. I don't know whether they had any intelligence reports or whether Hitler or his army gave the impression that they were not, they were preparing it then already for war against Russia.
So you moved to Ilfracombe then, round about October 1940?
Pardon?
You moved to Ilfracombe round about October 1940?
Yes, about that time.
And what were you doing at Ilfracombe? Because it says here you were building beach defences there as well.
Yes.
You were?
Yes. And it was a recruitment camp for, instead of Kitchener camp, you know, they had all moved to Ilfracombe and build a fresh camp of recruitment of people who had been interned on the Isle of Man, and when it was suddenly realized they could be quite usefully transferred to the army as well, they came there for training.
So this wasn't working on coastal defenses, this was establishing the camp, the
right.
Depot for the Pioneer Corps, so-called enemy aliens.
Yes.
And so you were actually building the camp, were you?
Pardon?
You were actually building.
Yes, that's right.
Now, what do you have to do to build a big camp like that, or a camp like that?
Well, the main thing, again, were the local population. They were very suspicious of all these foreign languages, people speaking these foreign languages, and yet they were in army uniform, and there was a lot of hostility, more so in the south of in Devon than there was around Kitchener Camp. I think we had better publicity in Kitchener Camp to keep people informed, and especially with this large number of very good artists in singing, musical instruments, and so on. On the social side, we were able to almost learning to fraternize with them in Kitchener Camp better than we did in Ilfracombe. It took a bit longer there in Ilfracombe to put people's minds at rest that we were not likely to help any German invasion, but that we were more than they were interested in bringing that war to a successful end.
Now, so what were you actually doing there? You were still with 93 company
yes,
then?
Yes.
So what? How long? So you're building the camp. What happened? What do you remember of that? Anything happened?
Well, some of us they realised could be. Could be used better, and so I was told, by that time I was a corporal, and I was told to get together a number of young soldiers to go to Thornley Bank, which was a...
Now when was that?
That was in the winter of 19... Was it 41 by then?
So what were you doing for the rest of 40? And it's only 2 months. You were just at the depot, building the depot, and then what?
Right. Yes.
And then you just stayed in the depot, did you?
Oh yes. I mean, we went on wood marches and things like that, you know, to keep ourselves fit. And we had a rifle range. We had a few more rifles by that time, and. We were doing some useful training there, and then some of us were detailed to go on a weapon training command course to Thornley Bank.
Now, you pick the group. How did you pick them?
Pardon?
You pick the people to go on this course. What were you looking for?
Oh, they were looking, first of all, experience with weapons, certain basic experience. Secondly, fit and youngish age group, sort of 20 to 30 rather than 40 to 50 and 60, which was the basic 93 company. Average age was, I think, nearer 50 than 30.
So, So where did you go for this course?
Oh, that must have been the winter of that 41.
And what was the course like? What do you remember of it?
Oh, it was excellent. They had it was an ordinary army course, weapon training command course, and again there was a bit of hostility first when they realized so many of us couldn't speak English properly and all this, and we had to have meetings with local councillors and...
Now where is this? It's Thornley Bank, is it?
Somewhere in up north.
Is it in Scotland?
Or? I think it must be on the border of Scotland.
All right, we'll look it up. And again there was problems with the local population.
Yes, at first. And when they realized, you know, that we had more reason to be in this war than they had almost, they became very friendly, much more friendly than they ever had been down in Ilfracombe or in Kitchener Camp.
Now, what about the actual weapons training?
Oh, it was first, Lars. I mean, we had... one of the things I remember particularly, we had to... run across a gully, and the instructors had rifles with live ammunition, and they were firing across that gully, and you had to dodge these odd rifle shots, or you would be ending up in hospital by accident. And it was real life.
Was it a commando course, or was it just a normal weapons training course?
No, normal army weapon training course.
I just wonder, because it says command course. I wonder if there'd been a slip-up in the thing. No. Yeah. So there's exercise with live ammunition. Now, which weapons were you being trained on? You already knew the rifle, but what else were you taught?
We were introduced to machine guns and to...
Which machine guns?
Lewis, they would from First World War, Lewis machine guns.
Oh. And what did you think of the Lewis gun?
Oh, we thought it was wonderful, because it was really once you could keep them going, you know, nothing got stuck in there. They went on the bullets were all stuck onto a piece of linen or something.
Now that's a Vickers.
Huh?
That's the Vickers machine gun. Is that the one you mean?
Yes.
Not the Lewis. Lewis has a circular drum.
Yes, that's right.
So you did both?
Oh, yes. We liked all this. We were all introduced to all the latest as well as the old-fashioned from World War One, and also Mills bombs. And, of course, we had a few accidents. You know, somebody pulled the fuse too early out, and the Mills bomb exploded in his hand and so on and things.
What was the training like with the Mills bomb?
It was very tough training. They treated us like any other soldier. There was no allowance made for the fact that someone may not have understood enough English to do what he was told. And we thought it was, we felt we were part of the British Army by that.
Did you do Sten gun training? Did you get the Sten there?
Yes.
What did you think of the Sten?
Well, we thought it was great because it was short. You couldn't aim at anybody and hit, you know. It was not for target practice or even in it was for close fighting. Instead of fists, it was just a bit longer, you know.
So it's just to put a lot of fire into an area without pinpointing
it. That's it.
And any other weapons you remember? Mortars?
Ben?
Mortars?
Oh, yes, mortar training. And
what do you do with them?
Well, we were supposed to learn how to fix one of these to the rifle.
A rifle grenade.
The rifle grenade. And again, we had a few accidents because it could be carelessness, you know, and it would land somebody in hospital. But anyway, I seemed to have done well because I was suddenly promoted to sergeant.
Now, were you still with 90? Did you go back to Ilfracombe?
Yes. And now, by that time, we were told we would have to take over the training of new recruits. And
now, what was that like, training the new recruits? Because they'd all be enemy, so-called enemy aliens,
yes,
as well.
Right, yeah.
Well, tell us about the training. What do you remember of that?
Oh, some of them, of course, had no idea what we were talking about. And we had learned the army language very quickly, some of us. And it was a bit of a lark for some, but at the same time it was a bit of a schmuzzle. If the Germans had invaded then, I think we would have been not as good as we were later on.
And did they learn quickly? I mean, you'd learn fairly quickly.
Yes.
Did they learn quickly?
Yes, some were very quick learners and some, of course, tried hard, but were the best will in the world. They would never make a soldier.
And how did you like being a sergeant? How did you get on with them, the recruits, as a sergeant? Because you know.
Well, the thing is that the reputation I got that I'd never put a man on a charge, and that made me too popular for words. You know, the sergeant major called me in once or twice. You know, says nothing to be proud of, to be known as for that reason. So you have to learn to be a bit more strict and more strict. But I still couldn't bring myself to put anybody on a charge.
Did they take advantage of that, or did they respond with loyalty to your attitude?
Yes, they thought they didn't treat me as a sort of a soft option, you know. They thought, well, the bloke is not showing off, is not using or pointing to his stripes. Now, did you know what that means, that sort of attitude?
How did you get on with the other NCOs yourself?
Oh, very good, especially the English NCOs were in the sergeant's mess, you know. They were very helpful and very appreciative too. And
What about the officers?
The officers didn't get on too well with a young officer, a chap officer, 22, just been commissioned. Found them, they were not my cup of tea, as it were. But I will never forget where we had an English officer, just been commissioned. And we were painting the inside of a Nissen hut, and the poor chap was foolish enough to stand just directly under my ladder, and so I had a wonderful chance. I dropped a whole gallon of white paint on the poor chap's head, and it didn't actually hit him, but it splashed his uniform and everything.
And you had done it deliberately.
And of course, I had to go in front of the major, and it was the charge ward that it was intentional. But I lied my way out of this charge. But I lost the stripe immediately.
So you're back to corporal.
Oh yes.
Did you go quickly back up again? Because they often
it took us about 6 months to get the stripe back. But
was it worth it? Dropping the paint on him?
Well, it was mainly a question of money. You know, the sergeant's pay was, in fact, so good that the firm I'd been working for before the war, what made up my money to the taking to his to the sergeant, the corporals or lance corporals or private money to, and paid it to my mother. Had to stop it because my army pay was certainly more than I ever had as a civilian.
Now, what was a sergeant's mess like? You know, because you'd be allowed, when you were a sergeant, you know, on and off.
Well, there was a lot of drinking going on in there by the old type of sergeant from the First World War. They were all good soldiers, but the hard drinking didn't appeal to me, and that was a pity, because had I been joining them, I probably would have had an easier life.
Did the two, you know, the German NCOs, or enemy alien, ex-enemy, and the English NCOs, the old First World War veterans, how did you get on? Because they spent time fighting the Germans.
Of the old First World War NCOs, senior NCOs, resented us, definitely. But the majority, especially the age group between 20 and 30, accepted us.
Now, and they didn't pressurise you to drink in the mess, because you didn't drink.
No, not at all. In fact, they realised, you know, we had to do speeches sometimes to them, and tell them how we got into the army, why we were in this war, and we felt, you know, that there were only perhaps two or three, or most of us four, alien sergeants, if you call them that. And they realized that we had more reason to be in this war than they had.
Now, how long were you at? So what happens next? So you're still with 93 Company, still, but you're at the is 93 Company at the Pioneer Corps depot at Ilfracombe?
Yes.
Yeah, they do it. So what happens next then?
Well, then suddenly I forget where we were stationed. I think we were stationed in Newbury on the race course, and I was.
Now, when did that happen? So you moved to Newbury.
Yes.
Now, who? When was that?
I think it was 1942.
So you were at Ilfracombe till 42.
Yes.
And did the whole of 93 Company go to Newbury, or was it just you?
No. We were more or less dispersed, and especially the NCOs were taken away and sent to. I was sent to 220 Company, I believe.
That's your second one. That makes sense. So it's 220 Company, Pioneer Corps.
Yes. And
and that's at Newbury Racecourse.
Yes. I didn't stay there long, and finished up in 249 Company.
Now, hang on. So what were you doing at Newbury Racecourse? What was the unit doing?
It was mainly training, for rifle training, map reading, and it was hardly any physical work like being sent out to build depots and, or landing strips and things like that. I think it was really then preparing for D-Day. And it was...
So that's 42 to... how long? 42 or 43 then?
Yes, 42 and 43. 43, I think I was transferred to 249 Company.
And also Pioneer Corps, of course.
Yeah.
And where were they at? Or were they moving about?
I think they were at Hoddam Castle.
At where?
Hoddam Castle.
Do you know how you spell it?
H-O-D-D-A-M-C-A-S-T Castle. And it was on the border of New Mills, of Ecclefechan, which is a border town between Scotland and England.
And that was in 1943?
That's 43, yes.